This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. فلما جهزهم بجهازهم جعل السقاية في رحل أخيه ثم أذن مؤذن أيتها العير إنكم لسارقون. قالوا وأقبلوا عليهم ماذا تفقدون؟ قالوا نفقد صواع الملك ولمن جاء به حمل بعير وأنا به زعيم. قالوا تالله لقد علمتم ما جئنا لنفسد في الأرض وما كنا سارقين. قالوا فما جزاؤه إن كنتم كاذبين. قالوا جزاؤه من وجد في رحله فهو جزاؤه كذلك نجزي الظالمين. رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي امري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقهوا قولي. الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه اجمعين. بعد, once again everyone, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. I want to start by mentioning two things before I get into the ayat today. As you can see in the title on the screen, I'm going to hope to cover ayahs number 70 to 75, which is unusual. These are six ayat in one session, but really there's no, from my assessment, there's no really other way to look at these ayat except as one unit, so we're going to try to cover them together. But before we do, two items that are outstanding. One is that I'm very grateful to Dr. Akram Nadwi for having written about the tafsir of the ayah about entering from different doors. You remember I read that for you guys. He actually ended up writing another article for me, which he had promised for the next week, about his understanding and a comprehensive understanding of Al-Ain, the evil eye itself. And inshallah, in a separate session that's not part of this series, probably sometime this week, I'm going to be sharing that with you. And if nothing, I don't think I'll dedicate a khutbah to it, but at least a talk at some point in this week outside of this series, I'll discuss that with you guys and read through it and inshallah explain that to you. Because I personally benefited quite a bit from the piece that he wrote, and I'm grateful to him, may Allah preserve him. The other thing that I wanted to mention is the profile that we built of Binyamin. A young fellow sent me an email this week saying something that got me thinking. He said, well, the kind of way that I depicted, you know, what has happened with Yaqub alayhi salam and the loss of Yusuf alayhi salam and how overprotective he is of Binyamin, and maybe how we're not hearing much from Binyamin. So he's sort of inhibited and, you know, like a type B personality, is very socially introverted and not really speaking for himself and things like that. There, because we're not hearing from him, that's one way to depict the profile of Binyamin, but there's another way of looking at him, and that's equally plausible. And actually, maybe perhaps we should look at it that way. And that is that this father, Yaqub alayhi salam, is known to be a great father, and he will do everything he can to raise his children right. And that means raise them right spiritually, morally, emotionally, like in every way, he's going to be a nurturing father, not just religiously. And if we are to look at him that way, then perhaps now that he understands that his sons have a tendency to be harmful towards siblings that they're jealous of, and he's already tasted that with Yusuf alayhi salam, that he's raising Binyamin, Yaqub alayhi salam is raising Binyamin with an extra sense of not just protectiveness, but an awareness. You know, we saw an early awareness from him where he told Yusuf alayhi salam, don't tell your brothers this dream. They might scheme against you, right? But you can imagine the conversations that are not recorded in the Quran. What is he going to tell his younger son Binyamin? Don't open up to them too much. Don't be too trusting with them. You need to watch yourself. You need to guard yourself. And that might be one way of inhibiting somebody, but it also might be a way of toughening somebody up. He's got to hold his own with 10 other aggressive siblings, right? And he has to protect himself and his father. And he's not going to let history repeat itself. And it can be that he has to hold his own, even though they're bullying him and doing all that other stuff, that he might be able to actually take it and take a tough stand. And that might be yet another reason they don't like him too much. And he's staying behind and taking care of dad. And he's saying, I'm going to do what dad says. And he's not speaking. If we look at it that way, that he is in fact, instead of being weakened, but actually toughened up and more defensive and on guard all the time, on red alert all the time, that finally when he does meet his brother, the victim of their abuse, then that hard shell that he has to put up with that family, he doesn't have to put that up anymore, and he breaks down. You know, sometimes kids, if they're growing up in a tough environment, they act really tough, right? And they'll use rough language, and they'll try to, like, what? And, you know, you're like, wow, this person's made of several hard layers, and they're acting really hard and unimpressed and unmoved emotionally. But if they get to somebody who really understands them, then those shells, that costume comes off. It's all a costume. It's just this armor that they're wearing, this emotional armor to protect themselves, to not let anybody see weakness, because being vulnerable is being weak, right? And then you finally are in the presence of someone you can trust enough that you can be vulnerable, and he is vulnerable, and he has a breakdown, and then Yusuf alayhi salam says, فَلَا تَبْتَئِسْ بِمَا كَانُوا يَعْمَلُونَ. You don't have to be sad about what you've been holding in all this time, the tough shell you may have had to put up all this time. You know, because on the you know, somebody could look angry on the outside, but they're crying on the inside, right? They're defending themselves on the outside, but they're breaking apart on the inside. And you can only hold up your shell like that so long before things fall apart. So that may be what has happened between Yusuf and Binyamin when this reunion occurs. I'll also share with you, because there, you know, this part of the story that we're going to talk about now from 70 to 75, there's lots of different ways of looking at the details of what happened. And I've kind of talked about some of these things with you guys before, that there are different ways of interpreting the events as they occurred based on the picture painted by the Quran itself. I will share with you what I find the most compelling way of looking at it. And what it seems from the text, what we can imply from the text, is, so I'll fill you in before we get there, so the story makes all sense to you. The plan that is about to be put in place for Binyamin to be able to stay with Yusuf, because he can't, you know, he's not going to be able to stay with him if they don't put some plan in place. There's no justification. He just brought them over. You know, you better bring your brother that you claim you have. Now they've come, they've had a reunion, but he's got to go back, right? He doesn't have immigration status to stay. He's on a visitor visa, right? So he doesn't have residency. He doesn't have citizenship in Egypt. How can you justify him staying? And of all places, staying in the highest government office, right? The highest officer in the land can't be harboring an illegal immigrant. That can't work. So there has to be some way that they can justify him staying there. And so in order to put this together, it seems that Yusuf alayhi salam definitely, you know, hashed a scheme. He put a scheme together, a plan together, but he put Binyamin in on it. So they're both in on it together. Okay, so that's the first thing I'm going to start with, that isn't explicitly stated, but it's very easy to imply that they are both in on it, and this is a plan they put together themselves, you know, in cooperation with each other. So now let's read on from ayah number 70. فَلَمَّا جَهَزَهُمْ بِجَهَازِهِمْ. Then finally when he, meaning Yusuf alayhi salam, loaded up their shipments with them, meaning when he boarded their loaded their camels with the food supplies, because he said he promised them another load, right? On the missing load, but actually he's doubling their load because they went back with a full load. Now they brought the payment back and now they're getting another load. So they're getting twice everybody else, right? So now they're getting this load, everybody's happy, and they're just getting stuff boarded on, loaded onto their caravan, their camels. جَعَلَ السِّقَايَةَ فِي رَحْلِ أَخِيهِ. He put the cup in the bag or in the luggage of his brother. Now he has 11 brothers, but what does the Quran mean, his brother? Meaning the brother he wants to keep with him. Also, it means the brother that they share the same mom, right? So he put the cup, now we don't know what the cup is yet, so we'll see. The Quran deliberately says the cup, and the reader, listener the first time would say, he put the cup in it, what does that mean? And this is the Quran's way of making us ask questions and then answering them later on. And then you go, oh, okay, that's what that means. Right? Because the original, imagine the original audience that heard this. When they heard, جَعَلَ السِّقَايَةَ فِي رَحْلِ أَخِيهِ, when the Sahaba, the companions of the Prophet ﷺ, رضي الله عنهم أجمعين, may Allah be pleased with them, when they heard this ayah for the first time, they never heard an old cup before. And when they hear, oh, his brother put a cup in his, you know, in his bag or in his luggage, what is that supposed to mean? They wouldn't know what that suggests, right? So it's building up. And this is important to mention because the Quran, as you read it, not everything makes sense immediately. You have to keep on reading for things to tie together, right? And that's Allah's way of expecting you to join things together and to actually have Allah's word answer the questions that Allah's words force you to have. First, Allah Himself, you know, says things in a way that makes you ask questions. And then He'll answer those questions. He could have said this in a way, let me tell you about this cup. And let me give you all the background information you need to know about this cup. You know nothing. You just know there's a cup that was placed. So deliberately, Allah makes the reader want to ask questions. And that's a profound quality of the Quran, because Allah forces us to become thinkers and forces us to be inquisitive. This is a religion that wants you to be inquisitive and curious about what is it that Allah is saying, what is He getting at, right? And He wants you to have those aha moments as you read on. So it's crazy to me that there are people who, you know, love this religion and love this book, but think this book has nothing to do with thinking about it. No. You shouldn't think about it. It's for scholars to think about. What? The people that it came to were al-ummiyin. Fil ummiyina rasulan, people that have no scholarly background, among them Allah sent a messenger, alayhi salatu wasalam. The first of its audience, the majority of the Quran was revealed in Mecca, and most people didn't believe. So most of the audience of the Quran originally was even non-Muslims. Think about that. Most people that heard the Quran in Mecca were not the believers. They were non-believers. The very few minority were the believers. But the Quran was spreading in Mecca all over the place, right? So it's a universal message that forces us to think. Anyhow, so he puts the cup in the bag of his brother, in the luggage of his brother. ثُمَّ أَذَّنَ مُؤَذِّنٌ Sometime after, ثُمَّ أَذَّنَ مُؤَذِّنٌ The announcer makes an announcement. The announcer announced. Now, what is this announcer guy? You know, if you go, I used to work at a store, so I know this for a fact. When you work at a store and there's a lot of theft, you know, and shoplifting at a store. I used to work at a clothing store in Queens in New York when I was in high school. And it was a kind of rough neighborhood, and kids try to steal like t-shirts and like socks or whatever they stick in their pocket, you know. But so you have these little alarm sticker thingies that are on the clothes, and you have a magnet at the cash register that pulls it off, and then you can go. If you don't take it off and you try to go through the metal detector, the alarm goes off, and you know they have to go through your bag. And sometimes people pay for their stuff and they're going out, and the alarm goes off anyway because the cashier forgot to take it out. And if they try to pull it off, ink comes out. Right, so this is modern technology with alarms at doors, right? With sensors for somebody stealing. Back in the day, they didn't have that. They just had security guards with a full-time job. So instead of the door going, there was a guy that says, "Thief! Alert!" that's what they had. One guy's job is just this, right? He's just there to keep an eye, and they report to him. So now let me just paint the scene for you as best I can, filling in the gaps of this cup. Basically, if you go into a royal palace, because this is originally the royal palace, right? And there's an area where people are given their food shipments. And this is part, an extension of the palace. It's not the king's court anymore, and it's not the inner offices. This is where the camels come in, and the food is given to them. But even this has a grandiose nature to it. This is a place of governance. This is a place where visitors are coming. So there's a part of it where people are boarded, but they come in and they're kind of impressed with this official building. Now, what do you have in official buildings? Nowadays, if you go to a governor's mansion, or you go to Congress, or you go to, like, you know, city offices and things like that, you have art on the walls, right? And sometimes in schools and government, you know, institutions, you have trophies, symbolic things that are representations of the heritage or the prestige of the place that you're in, right? And those kinds of things, trophies and artwork and statues and things like that, they give you a sense of, I'm in an official place. I'm in a serious place. This is, you know, you have to act a certain way, right? So the environment and the artwork on the walls and the furnishings kind of help with that vibe. Now, it seems there's a symbolic goblet, like a large cup. It's called a suwa. A suwa is a measuring cup. So those are usually bigger. Those of you that make shakes and things like that use a suwa, because you know it has measures like this many ounces or this many grams, right? Or milligrams. So that stuff, or liters, that stuff is, that cup or that container is called a suwa. But the king also has like a large mug that he drinks from, right? And it's ornate. It's got jewels on it, maybe, or it's made of gold or silver, whatever it is. And it's sitting there like, ooh, the king's cup kind of thing. And it may be symbolic because, you know, he's poetically speaking, he's filling everyone's cup, right? everybody's coming to him with an empty cup and he's filling it for them. So this is a symbolic king's cup that kind of gives you an impression. We are here to be fed or to be given drink by the great king. Also, the cup is interesting and symbolic because the nation and the regions of that part of the world are going through a drought. So nobody has anything to drink. And yet symbolically, what does the king have here? A cup. So you come in here and it gives you the impression we are here with a place that is going to provide us. Right? So it's got this symbolic value. It's this national treasure type thing that's there. Some argue that this cup was literally the king's cup. Like the king used to drink his Pepsi in this cup. And Yusuf alayhi salam nabbed it and put it in the bag. Well, that seems less plausible. Or it could be that Yusuf alayhi salam was given a special cup by the king, like as a symbol. He's not literally the one that's measuring the rice and the flour in his cup and putting it. Some argue that that's the cup that was used. But that cup wouldn't have any value. That's like, you know, like a spoon missing. It's just a tool. You could just have any of them. But if he was given a symbolic one, like a trophy kind of cup that represents the king's authority and that's placed there as a decoration piece, then all of a sudden, when Yusuf alayhi salam, while everybody's putting their bags, he takes that, you know, that trophy piece, that historical piece, that museum artifact, and he puts it in his brother's bag. And the security guard looking around says, something's off. The cup's missing. What was the last group that came through here? And the group that comes through with their camels and everybody, they're called a'ir in Arabic. A'ir. A'ir is the Arabic word for something that's a reinforcement, meaning the camels came skinny and they're reinforced with more and more load. A loaded caravan is called a'ir. And the thing is, we're going to learn later on, but I'm breaking the mystery for you now. The a'ir, the caravan, isn't just made up of the 11 brothers. It's actually lots of people from the tribe, the city, or the region that travel together. So it's a couple of hundred people, 50, 60 people at least, that are traveling all together. And they're all leaving. So it's not like the security guard said, Yusuf's brothers are the thieves. He's talking about they don't know who did it, but they know this one contingent of 50, 60, 100 people came through and they're slowly leaving the main gate. And now all of a sudden the cup was here and now it's missing. Hey, the cup's missing. The cup's missing. The cup's missing. And the guy on top of the tower, the security guard, the dee, 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 dee guy, he just goes, are you? So now what happens? He put the cup in it, and the announcer calls out, Ayyatuha al-'ir, innakum lasariqoon. Caravan, you people are thieves. You people are thieves. So he's calling all of them thieves, right? Even though probably one of them is a thief. But the point is, all of you are suspects until this is solved. You're not going anywhere. All of you better stop. Now, the announcement that's made, this is again a discussion among scholars, that the mu'adhin, the guy who makes the call, could be a group, could be a person. That's a side thing. And it's completely plausible that it's multiple that are calling him, you know, calling them thieves or the announcement's been made. But others say this mu'adhin, this person who made the announcement, has some authority. I would argue he has no more authority than a security guard. And he's the one who blows the whistle and all the security guards kind of show up. So he's kind of part of the police force, if you will. Right? So when he makes this announcement, innakum lasariqoon, the scene has now been set in motion. But there's a very fundamental question that I skipped on purpose because I want you to hurt your head over it. Because it hurt Mufassirun's head, you know, they hurt their heads over it a long time ago when discussing these ayat. And what's that? Yusuf alayhi salam placed a cup illegally. It's not his cup, as we will see. It's not his personal property. And he put it in his brother's bag. And did he tell anybody he's doing that? No. And you find in other ayat, when he wants something to get done, remember when he had their money put back in their bag? Remember that? Did he do it himself or did he tell his servants to do it? He told his two servants, remember? And he told his fityan, his servants, to go do it. But this time, Allah says, he placed it in their bag. He placed the cup in his brother's bag. So did he tell servants to do it or do it himself? So Yusuf alayhi salam himself, illegally in the law of that land, took the cup and put it inside. How do we know it's illegal? Because the cops went on alert. And they said, it's missing. It's missing. They didn't say, the king must have had an extra Pepsi and they put it in the dishwasher. They're not always thinking like that because this is a thing to look at. And all of a sudden, the frame is there, but the painting's missing. There's a problem. Or the glass casing is there, but the trophy's gone from the inside. That's a problem, right? So it go, the alarm goes off, and all of you are thieves. Innakum lasariqun. Qalu. They all turned, they all said, the caravan is in shock. The whole, all, everybody moving, the 11 camels of Yusuf's family, his brothers, but also others, another couple of dozen camels, everybody, they all turned back. And now they're facing them. وَأَقْبَلُوا عَلَيْهِمْ. So أَقْبَلُوا عَلَيْهِمْ has been interpreted two ways. They said, when the cops came and surrounded them and faced them, what are you guys looking for? What's going on? Or it could be they even, what? And they turned back. They turned their camels back. And they said, "Mada tafqidun? What are you missing? What are you missing?" Now, all of them have been called thieves. So all of them are having a nervous breakdown. And they're pretty sure nobody's stolen anything. So they're pretty sure that they're not guilty. So like, what are you missing? We didn't take anything. But you know that problem that I said? A prophet has done this. A prophet has created a scenario where a bunch of people are going to get falsely accused. Yes or no? And now those people have to try and defend themselves. Yes or no? And all of this is clearly illegal in that country. Yes or no? Yeah. That's a problem. Because now we're saying a prophet did that? How? And some try to kind of skirt the issue and say, well, no, he may not have done it directly. He may have told his servants to do it. Okay. But this, even if you catch the servants, who initiated the scheme? It's like sometimes, you know, rich people get people to do their dirty work, right? And then the people who did the dirty work get caught and they get off scot-free. No, who paid you to do this, right? So we're not, first of all, I'm not incriminating Yusuf alayhi salam, but I do want you to understand he did something very unusual. He's done something very, very unusual. We don't normally talk about prophets like this or think about prophets like this, right? So now he's done this. And now the call has been made. All of you are thieves. And if you could say, well, it's not that bad. Well, you know what? Let's try the empathy card. What if you were in that caravan? You came and bought food with hard-earned money, and you're walking back, and you're being told what? You're a potential thief. I'm going to go through your bags. Is that humiliating or no? Absolutely. And so they say, what are you missing? قالوا, they said. Now remember, there was a one announcement guy. He said, you're thieves. But now the words are, they said. What does that tell you? Cops are surrounding them. Soldiers have shown up. People are running. The guards are running out of the palace, surrounding the camel load, whatever, 30 camels there are, 40 camels there are. And they're all surrounding them, including the brothers of Yusuf alayhi salam. They're like, we're missing. قَالُوا نَفْقِدُ سُوَاعَ الْمَلِكِ. Now listen to the words. We are missing the goblet of the king. Suwa is the larger cup. Before Allah just called it a cup. A siqaya is something you drink in. So it didn't sound like enough, nothing bad happened. But now, Suwa al-Malik, the goblet, the larger cup of the king, the measuring cup, the symbolic measuring cup of the king, this majestic item is missing. وَلِمَنْ جَاءَ بِهِ حِمْلُ بَعِيرٍ. Now, these words seem, even though it's not explicit, it seems most plausible that these words are said by Yusuf alayhi salam himself. Now listen carefully. And whoever brings it, the missing goblet, the missing cup, they get a load of a full camel. Their reward is an extra camel load. Now, obviously, people didn't come with a camel, did they? An extra camel. So they're going to get a load and they're going to get what? A camel. Because you can't get a camel load and walk with it on your back. You don't have that kind of strength. You need a camel with it. And nobody has empty camels. So you're going to get a camel and a full load of food if for a year, if you can retrieve whoever can find this cup. وَلِمَنْ جَاءَ بِهِمْ لُبَعِيُ. And then, so now this is Yusuf alayhi salam saying it, right? Some interpreters say the guy who announced, the thief, he said it. My problem is his job is making announcements. His job is not to announce rewards. And he can't come up in a split second with what the reward is going to be. Who has that kind of authority over who should be given what and for what? That's Yusuf alayhi salam. So he's the one who says, whoever can come forward with it, وَلِمَنْ جَاءَ بِهِ حِمْلُ بَعِيرٍ, the full load of a camel, وَأَنَا بِهِ زَعِيمٍ, and I am the one that's guaranteeing that full load of the camel will be given. I guarantee it myself. He added that. Now, why did he add that? I want you to understand. There's two possibilities. One possibility is Yusuf alayhi salam, is when he makes this announcement about bring me the cup, he's saying, anybody who knows any information and can help me point out the thief, I will reward you, right? Like, you know, the wanted and reward posters. That's one scenario. But the other scenario is maybe there is a thief. And the thief says, oh my God, so you're saying if I hand it in and say, oh, look what I stumbled upon, the cup, then they'll give me a full load of camel? That doesn't make any sense. They're just tricking me. Like if I come forward with the goblet and say I found it, they're going to accuse me of stealing it, right? So yeah, nice try, government, but I'm not coming forward because I know you're going to arrest me even though you say you're going to reward me. You understand? So he says what? Wa ana bihi za'im. And I'm the one guaranteeing it. Why? And people usually, when the government says, I guarantee it. We guarantee it. That's all the more reason to run in the opposite direction. But when Yusuf alayhi salam, ana, I am the one that guarantees it. I'm the one that stands by it. You know what that means? The nation knows when he speaks, he's a man of his word. Even a crook would know that, man, if I come forward and make up some silly story like, oh, I don't know how I found it. It was just under my, in my chair for some reason. Here it is. You guys couldn't find it. It was right here, you know, and I'm going to get a free load of camel and a full load for a year, free food for a year. Even that, because he's guaranteed it, even a thief would have confidence. But now, but Yusuf Aleyhi Salaam knows there is no thief, right? And whoever can bring it forward gets the load of a camel. He's the one who took it away to begin with. So all of this is actually what I like to call al-harbu khud'a. The Prophet ﷺ said, war is deception. War is deception. This is a kind of war. And that's what I'm going to explain to you guys tomorrow. Why is this okay? This doesn't sound like it's okay. It seems like if you heard, take Yusuf alayhi salam out of this equation for a moment, and you say there's somebody who falsely placed evidence in somebody else's luggage and at an airport, and then said, I'm missing my phone. And whoever finds it, I'll reward them. And then they find it in this bag, and this person gets arrested. Would you be okay with that kind of act? Would you not think that's criminal? Would you not think there's something morally wrong with that? Right? So if, because it's Yusuf alayhi salam and he's a prophet, we honor and dignify everything that he does. And the Quran glorifies it. But if you take, the Quran's done this deliberately, clearly on purpose. But if anybody else does this, the Muslim sensibility is, there's something wrong with this. This can't be right. How is this right? There's something that doesn't sit right with scheming and hashing a plan that's made up of a lie. It is a lie at the end of the day. That is absolutely a lie. You know, a lie doesn't have to be, I didn't, you know, black and white. A lie can be a creating a scenario that's based on a lie. There is no theft. The theft itself is a lie, isn't it? So this is, a from a philosophical point of view, something we have to grasp really well. What is going on here? What is the Quran teaching us? And that's what I want your heads to be scratching over all day. So I'll talk to you about it tomorrow in detail. But before we do that, so he gives this guarantee. I'll guarantee whoever can bring it forward. Now the brothers of Yusuf. There's different ways of reading this, but I'm reading this the way Sheikh Suhaib and I find most plausible. Okay, so to just kind of make a coherent story the way we see it. Allahu ta'ala alam. The brothers of Yusuf are part of the larger caravan, but they see an opportunity to speak up first and kind of declare their innocence before anybody else talks. So they say, قَالُوا تَاللَّهِ, they say, we swear to God. And you, if you have Arab friends, you've heard them say wallahi lots of times. Yeah, wallahi means what? I swear by God. I swear to God. But tallahi with a ta, as opposed to wallahi with a wow. Tallahi is said in extreme circumstances when somebody's overwhelmed, when somebody's speaking in exclamations over and above the normal. So tallahi is very unusual, you know, oath. In the Quran, for example, Ibrahim alayhi salam used this oath when he said, tallahi la'akidanna asnabakum. I swear to God, I have a plan for your idols. I'm scheming for your idols. Because you know what did he do with those idols? He smashed them, right? When they left. And he was so angry, he didn't say wallahi, he said what? Tallahi. Now these guys, emphatic and so declared in public, tallahi. We swear to God, the brothers of Yusuf, alayhi salam. So what did they say after tallahi? لَقَدْ عَلِمْتُمْ مَا جِئْنَا لِنُفْسِدَ فِي الْأَرْضِ. You all know we didn't come here to make trouble in the country. We didn't come here for that. We, of course, why would we come back and make trouble? Now, why are they saying, you already know we didn't come here for that purpose. For sure, you people know we're good. Why are they saying that? First of all, we came here last time. We didn't steal nothing. Second of all, we were told we better prove that we are honest about having another brother. And we came back proving our innocence. Why would we come back with a brother to get in trouble with the government? That doesn't make sense. You already know it couldn't be us. لَقَدْ عَلِمْتُمْ مَا جِئْنَا لِنُفْسِدَ فِي الْأَرْضِ. We didn't come to make any trouble in the land. وَمَا كُنَّا صَادِقِينَ. We've never been thieves. We've never had any thieving problems. And we've come here before, we never stole anything. So it clearly isn't us. And it doesn't even make sense for us. Because look at how good the king has been to us. Why do we have to steal? We have extra year's food. There's no possibility of us being thieves. So before anybody else could speak, they just came out and said, by the way, before you start your investigation, we just want to let you know, clearly it's not us, right? Like, it's probably one of these, but, you know. So they kind of put themselves out there. Now, the thing is, as a parent, I can tell you, if you don't know who did it, and one kid comes out and says, oh, couldn't have been me, you start your investigation with that one. That's where you start. So when they come out and say, oh, I swear to God, it couldn't have been us. We didn't come here to make trouble. We came here to feed our families, and we've never been thieves. وَمَا كُنَّا سَارِقِينَ. We haven't been thieves at all. قَالُوا. Then the cop said, oh yeah, you're not? Okay, that's fine. So فَمَا جَزَاؤُهُ إِن كُنْتُمْ كَاذِبِينَ. And what should be its punishment if you are lying? So okay, you're telling the truth. But in case you are lying, what do you think you should get as a punishment? فَمَا جَزَاؤُهُ إِن كُنْتُمْ كَاذِبِينَ. Now these brothers of Yusuf ﷺ are really confident because they know they didn't steal. So they kind of roll up their sleeves and say, "Qalu, jaza'uhu, the punishment is someone. It's punishment. It's reward should be what man wujida fi rahlihi fa huwa jaza'uhu. Whoever the thing is found in their luggage, they themselves are its punishment. Meaning, how do we pay for it? The person, if you find it in their bag, they will pay for it with their life. They'll become a slave. That person becomes the payment." They say, they're that confident, right? So they're like, it's punishment. Whoever's bag is found in, it's found in, then they are the payment. We're good with that. From a grammar point of view, by the way, those of you that are grammar geeks, jaza'uhu is a mubtada. Man wujida fi rahlihi is the shart. And, you know, fahuwa jaza'uhu is jawabu shart. And that jumla shartiya is the khabar of the mubtada, which means it's payment. Well, whoever's bag it's in, then they are its payment. That's one reading. That's if the jaza'uhu is the mubtada and the rest of it is a khabar, and that khabar is made up of a jumla shartiya. The other reading is jaza'uhu is mubtada and man wujida fi rahlihi is the khabar, which would mean the translation would be a little bit different, but almost the same point. Its compensation is the one whose bag is it's found in. The pay is the person whose bag it's found in. He is its payment. So, you know how you say the boss is that guy. That guy is the boss. You say it twice, like flipped. They talk like that. They said, its payment is that person whose bag it's in. He is its payment. They flipped it. They talk like that. That's the other reading of it. So that reading, what does it tell you? It tells you that they're really dramatic about this statement. They're overly confident about it because they know they didn't do it. Right? So now, okay, fine, you didn't do it, but we still have to do due diligence. We're going to go through all the bags. We're going to check everything. So, فَبَدَأَ بِأَوْعِيَتِهِمْ. So he, Yusuf alayhi salam, started going through their bags. It could be he went through them directly. It could also be that he went through it with his servants. He went through their bags. قَبْلَ وِعَاءِ أَخِيهِ. Before going through the bag of his brother. Now, which bag was it in? The brother's bag, but he didn't go there first. It would be kind of odd if he just first bag, oh, look at this, what do we have here? It would be too obvious, right? And also the question is, I would argue from a kind of a believability point of view, if the first bag you stuck your hand in, it came out, that's not very believable. That sounds like a setup, right? Because there's 100 camels. But it can also be that if the last bag of the 100 bags you go through, you find it, that also looks like a setup, right? So the first one looks too clean, And wow, interesting. All the way at the end, you find it? That doesn't sound like, this sounds like something's fishy, right? But how do we understand that logically? You can understand it very logically because there's an order. And who's the last one in the caravan? The youngest brother in age order. And he's all the way at the back. So they go through one, two, three. There's even a narration by the time they get to the 11th brother, meaning Binyamin, Yusuf said, "No, not this one. I'm pretty sure he doesn't have it." Like that's one narration that even adds that to the story. I'm pretty sure he wouldn't have it because he spent time with him, right? And he, according to some, he took a liking to him, and they don't know that they're related and all that, but he knows that he was impressed with him. So he wouldn't. And I checked him out. I personally interrogated him previously and interviewed him. He wouldn't have it. But let's check anyway, kind of thing. So make it even less suspicious. So now, ثُمَّ اسْتَخْرَجَهَا مِنْ وِعَاءِ أَخِيهِ. Then he pulled it out from the container of, or the bag of his brother. So this is the story so far. I've actually gone on to read a little bit of 76 to you also. Now notice this went pretty quickly. So I'll read the whole thing to you again. When he loaded their goods, he placed the cup in the bag of his brother. Then an announcer made the call, "Caravan, you people are thieves." They turned back and responded, "What are you missing?" They said, "We're missing the goblet of the king, and whoever brings it gets the load of a full camel, and I am its guarantor." Who's the guarantor? Yusuf alayhi salam. So he's now speaking. So he the scene is the cops have come out, they've surrounded Yusuf himself has stepped down. Oh my God, he's here. The prime minister's here. Whoever finds it, I'll guarantee it. I will give you a load of camel. So he speaks like that from a position of authority. And it's the king's goblet, meaning the king has given his own goblet to Yusuf alayhi salam to keep as a symbol of his own authority. Right? And it's a swa', which I think it also suggests because it's a measuring cup, because he's giving people an equal measure, and it represents the king giving in measure to everybody. And that and the and in a sense, the king's measuring cup is Yusuf, right? Because Yusuf gives with proper measure. So it's interesting that he would have the Su'a al-Malik. So there's a poetic and kind of thematic undertone to that language. But anyway, so when this part happens, قَالُوا تَاللَّهِ, they said, "We swear to God, لَقَدْ عَلِمْتُ مَا جِئْنَا لِنُفْسِدَ فِي الْأَرْضِ." You already know we didn't come here to make trouble in the land. You people already know we're good. Remember they made that claim? And then, وَمَا كُنَّا سَارِقِينَ, we've never been thieves. Well, if you haven't been thieves, what should be the reward? Well, how should they pay if they are, if you're lying? What should be the pay? In kuntum kadhibin? Well, they said the it's payment. Whoever's bag is found in, that's their he's their payment. He's its payment. So in other words, he will be enslaved. Now Yusuf alayhi salam, and by the way, they say kadhalika najzi al-zalimin. This is the part I skipped. And that's how we pay wrong. This is how we reward wrongdoers, criminals. Now it's really interesting. They didn't say thieves, they said wrongdoers, right? Wrongdoers in Arabic, lalim, the classical definition is wad'u shay'in fi ghayri mahallihi, putting something where it doesn't belong. It's pretty cool. You see the connection? A lalim is someone who puts something where it doesn't belong, like the cup where it doesn't belong, right? They say it back in Canaan, where we come from, when somebody's found like that, they're turned into a slave in service. So they themselves pay to make up for whatever, right? For whatever crime they've done. So they say that's how we deal with it there. And it could also be كَذَلِكَ نَجْزِي الظَّالِمِينَ as duality, meaning, well, that's how we deal with wrongdoers here too. Or it could be the Egyptian government, the cops said, well, then in that case, if it's found, that's what we'll do. And it could be, why did they come out and say, well, the payment should be a fine, a penalty? No, the person himself should be enslaved. Why did they say that? They were so bold and so confident that they haven't done anything wrong, they're like, well, if it's found, then that person should be turned into a slave. I mean, I'm sure you guys have lesser punishments, but we take that kind of thing pretty seriously where we come from. So that person's life is over. They have to hand their life over. That's how we do it. That's how we do back home. And if you're going to talk like that, well, they say, well, if that's how you do back home, that's how we'll do it then. Now it's implied here, Yusuf alayhi salam knew that that's the law back home. Yusuf alayhi salam also knew that this question will come up. How should they be judged? And they might confidently come out and say that. Even if they don't say that, the person can get arrested or detained or whatever for stealing, right? They might may not be able to be let go back. But the fact that they said that, the entire scheme is coming to hash because the entire point was Yusuf does not want Binyamin back in Canaan under the abuse of these guys. He wants to save his brother from their abuses. So he wants to keep him at whatever cost. And this is the plan that he had come up with. Okay. So the moral dilemma that I've tried to paint for you that becomes a challenge in interpreting this ayah, we're going to see how beautifully, beautifully the Quran itself solves that problem. I tried to create a problem in your mind today. That's what I tried to do. And I'm going to show you, inshallah ta'ala, if Allah wills tomorrow, how beautifully Allah teaches us a profound lesson in life. A profound, intricate lesson in life. And a beautiful moral teaching inside of this part of the story. With the part that seems immoral at first is actually the height of morality. And it's a beautiful, beautiful lesson. So inshallah ta'ala, I hope you guys will join me tomorrow. That's enough for today. That's all we need to cover is to understand it seems that these ayat, and so much real estate is dedicated to these ayat, in painting the scene, Allah Azza wa Jal wants to also kind of turn the tables, it seems, in the way he depicts the story. You had Yusuf alayhi salam being falsely accused at one point, humiliated at one point. And all of those things happened because of the actions of who? His brothers. They started that chain of events in his life. And now the tables are turning. They're the ones being accused when they haven't done anything wrong. How does that feel? You don't like being put in that position? And then if you get caught, you will be turned into what? A slave? Ah, that sounds familiar, right? But you don't deserve to be enslaved, that you're enslaved also? That sounds pretty bad, you know? And now, last time you had to go back and tell your dad a funny story about how a wolf ate him. Now let's see how good you are at telling the truth. Go back. Tell him you couldn't bring your brother back because he stole. Right, go. Let's see how that works out. But we're not even there yet. But there's an irony and there's a kind of a payback that's starting to happen. And Yusuf alayhi salam could have right now come out and said, "By the way, I'm your brother, and you guys did a lot of messed up stuff." And he could do that. But it's as if he wants them to feel a little bit of what he made them feel. Also, there's a justice in this. There's a larger saving his brother and, you know, playing things out carefully. But there's also a bit of, they're now on the ropes, aren't they? Like, they caused him a lot of stress, and now who's stressing? They are. They're on the receiving end of it. And it's kind of a little bit of poetic justice going on in this part of the story. And he's in a position not to inflict pain on them, but at least you should know what it feels like to be called things you're not. And you should understand that you put me in that position. And you know, for some people who do wrong like that and feel no sense of consequence, they don't feel like they did anything wrong. And even if you tell them, you know how much you hurt me? Yeah, 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 you're really hurt. I know. I got it. Okay, you tell me enough times. Isn't that what they did with Yaqub alayhi salam when he's crying at home? Are you going to keep talking about Yusuf? Are you not done yet? That's how they talk to their dad. So they don't have that sensitivity. People like that, when they cannot feel sensitive to another person's pain, maybe the only time they can feel that pain is when they get a taste of it. You know, and not out of vengeance, but he didn't full out falsely accuse them, throw them all in jail. He could have done any of that. He could have put the cup in one of their other guys' bags, have him come in, the one who kicked him and beat him the most, right? Have put it in his bag, have him come out and have the soldiers go to town on him. Couldn't he do that? He has the authority to. In fact, he could even arrest them without giving a reason. He's the prime minister of Egypt. He could do whatever he wants to. But he is actually, in a very measured, subtle way, having them see what it feels like, so maybe their conscience will wake up. Maybe their conscience will wake up. Maybe they'll realize, man, now that's what it feels. That's what it's like to feel powerless. That's what it's like to be, you know, surrounded by authorities and you're completely helpless. You know, and the cops are questioning us and going through our stuff and we have no power to stop them. Even though it's our bags, we can't do anything. I wonder how Yusuf felt when they were just tossing him around, or what people must have done with him, or how he must have felt when we dealt with him like that, when we threw him inside of a well. Maybe some empathy will wake up because of this experience. You see, sometimes we go through experiences and maybe some part of us goes back and says, I made somebody else feel this. And maybe I need to realize that I caused them this pain. And maybe that's a wake-up call for me. So it may be a part of this equation, that this is part of a slight jolt, a little bit of an electric shock, wake-up call for them. But there's much more going on here that inshallah ta'ala, Allah himself explains in this ayah, ayah number 76. Tomorrow inshallah we're dedicated just to ayah number 76. So we'll talk about that then. Barakallahu li wa lakum. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi.